We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There's so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we've carved out a space just for you, the creative entrepreneur making and selling physical goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is much that we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, and welcome to Proof to Product. Today's interview is with someone I have had the pleasure of working with for a few years now through our PaperCamp program and my group coaching program. She is someone that I greatly admire and respect. Kiwi Schlafel is the brains and brawn behind Craft Boner, a stationery gift brand with the sole focus of making people chuckle. Over the last 8 years, Kiwi has opened a retail space, then left that retail space. She has expanded her product line to more than 300 SKUs across multiple product categories and recently discontinued over half of those products. And she has amassed an Instagram following of over 16,000 people in a relatively short time frame. And today, we are talking about all of it. The transitions, the fears, and how making these shifts have allowed her to do fewer things even better within her business. Kiwi acknowledges that she's still figuring out her next steps, and I appreciate her sharing her journey with us today. Enjoy. Hey, Kiwi. Welcome to Proof to Product.
Hi.
I am so glad to have you here. So Kiwi is one of my PaperCamp alumni, and she also is in our Proof to Product Mastermind and Group Coaching Program. So I have had the privilege of working with you as you've made some really big, scary moves in your business over the last 2 years. And I'm excited to have you on today to really share your story. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Yeah, Katie's like one of the few reasons I still feel sane after a lot of big changes and crazy things that I've done lately.
No, you are on the right path on your own already. But first things first, what were you doing before you started Craft Boner and what led you to start the business?
Well, I've always just really loved creating things, but never like had much of a trajectory for it. So in college, I studied fashion, and then I was like, fashion people are awful and terrible, and I hate them, and I don't want to do this. So I switched to journalism. And then I sort of got my first like big girl job in journalism when I moved to New Zealand, and I sort of was like, I hate this. I hate writing on a deadline. And then I started working at the Apple Store, and I was in my early 20s, and it's amazing to work at the Apple Store in your early 20s, especially I moved to New York, so it was a new place for me. And so, yeah, it's just like a party with like all your favorite people that you didn't even know were your favorite people when you're in your early 20s, and then it grinds on you real fast. It's a hard job. So yeah, so I got to the point where I just hated that job. I was just so burnt out, and I just felt like I had to use my like analytical brain constantly, and I was solving problems and troubleshooting and talking to people. And at heart, I was like, I'm an introvert who wants to make things.
I was just going to say, you're an introvert. And to be in a shop like that all day long, troubleshooting tech problems, oh my gosh, I'm sure that was draining for you.
Yeah. And so it was one of those things. I was living in New York. I did not leave my apartment on my days off because I was like, I cannot see another human person. Like, I just need time to reset. And so some family stuff happened, and it was sort of seemed like my lease was up, and it was sort of like the right time to move back. Mm-hmm. Oh, but I guess technically Craft Boner started before then. I sort of started it as like a DIY blog, which is where the name came into play, which is not a thing I thought about. I was just like, this is funny. It's going to be the thing.
Right.
And so it's sort of my creative outlet for a long time while I was working at the Apple Store. And then when I moved back, I was like, you know what? I'm going to be that millennial cliche. I'm going to live in my dad's basement and like try to do my own thing. It worked for a while, but it's just so slow. And I think that's something that people don't realize. Like when you first start a business, it's so, so slow. And like, you can always find stuff to do, but like, there's just not usually like a lot of money coming in or anything. So,
okay. You started with a blog, which is it makes a whole lot of sense given your background with writing and how talented you are with writing. And then you wanted to convert it into products. So what were the first products you were making, and were you selling them on Etsy or craft shows, or what were you doing there to start?
So I actually started out selling jewelry because I realized the blog, it was hard for me because it was like, the reason I started the blog was because there's so many craft blogs that are like moms and like really prim and proper. And I was like, there needs to be something that's like the complete opposite of this. And then I sort of realized it's my head's not, at least at the time, like wasn't really in the blogging sphere. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let's make stuff. I like to make jewelry. Let's make jewelry. So I started making jewelry. I was selling it on Etsy. I did some craft shows. It was in Boulder, Colorado, and Denver and Boulder have both like the small business maker sort of scene has really grown a lot over the past few years. But when I was doing it in 2012, I was like a show at the YMCA, and like next to me was like a lady who was selling her like homemade cleaning products in Tupperwares. And then on the other side of me was like a grandma knitting tea cozies. So I didn't do very well at those shows.
Well, okay. So this drives back to, what was your goal with starting this business? Were you just, was it still a side gig at that time? Were you looking for a regular job? Were you trying to make it your full-time job at that point?
Yeah. So my dream had always been like, make stuff, get enough money to like make that your full-time job.
Okay.
And, but it was still very much like a creative outlet. Like that was my only, I didn't have any business experience. And my dad, when I was in college, like begged me to take business classes. And I was like, no, dad, it's fine. I don't want to do that. And then in retrospect, I'm like, every time I call him, I'm like, you are right about the business classes. But so I was just sort of winging it. I honestly had no clue. I was just sort of rudderless trying to figure things out. And in Boulder at the time, like people, and also in New York, like people just didn't communicate, like didn't share. Like I tried to nerd out with like fellow makers at shows and stuff. And like, they were just not having it. Like it was just like a very competitive thing. So I honestly had no clue what I was doing at all. And if I like got an order, I'd be like, yeah. So I was temping. I had a temp job at the time. And just sort of like trying to make it really slowly.
Make it work.
Yeah. And it was very, very slow.
Well, okay. Did you feel like you had to follow a certain path to reach, and I'm air quoting here, success in your business?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I felt like a fraud every day. And I always thought like every single day, and sometimes still every day, I think, oh, God, I'm doing this wrong. Because I always thought like, you know, you had to do things a very certain way. And I thought you had to, you know, have that business education to be able to do it a certain way. So when I was in my dad's basement, the dream was always to like, make this my full-time gig, but I honestly never thought it would happen. I always thought it would be like this small sort of creative outlet.
Interesting.
And so, yeah. So I didn't even have any like framework. Like I didn't even know what the ladder was. Like I didn't even know, like I knew what a SKU number was, but I was like, I don't know what that has to do with me.
Yeah.
And so it was very unsustainable at the time because I was making all my jewelry by hand. A lot of it was like one-offs. And so it was like, you have to photograph it and list it every time. And then I really started to hate making jewelry because it just felt like a little factory because I was also way underpricing myself back then because I just had no clue. Because I was like, what would I pay for this versus like, you're not your target customer. Like you should not be pricing things based on what you can pay. And of course, I mean, again, no idea, no clue. This is coming from someone who's been like lifelong, like crafter making stuff, but I'm like selling does not come naturally to me. Like even now, if I'm at a craft show or anything, I'm like, hey, how's it going? How's your day? Like if you want to buy something, cool. Like, if not, that's totally fine too. It's whatever. It's fine.
Right. Stay and hang a while. But if you're not going to buy anything, sure, stay again.
Yeah, it's fine. We'll just chat. We'll just have a conversation for like 20 minutes. I don't mind.
Right.
So yeah, so selling has always been and still continues to be really hard for me. It's not a thing that comes naturally at all. It's just a thing I sort of slog through.
Yeah. Well, okay. So those were the early days where you were like feeling unfocused. You were doing jewelry at the time, which you no longer do. When did you start to branch out into other product categories? And like, I know, so you were selling at craft shows. You're probably selling retail on Etsy or something else too, right?
Yeah.
Back in the early days.
I was on Etsy back in the day. Still kind of am, but yeah.
Yeah. You're not alone in that. And then you went into wholesale and
No. So I... I'm just going to tell everyone that it's like okay to do everything the completely wrong way and then sort of figure it out as you go.
Okay.
Because I started making cards because at the time I felt like there were no cards with like curse words or like funny sort of pop culture quotes. Like that was not a thing that I saw anywhere. I'm sure there were sort of like at more specialty sort of stores but like curse words especially I feel like have really seen like a heyday. And so for me, that's always been an outlet for expressing myself. Like, right. I love dropping an F-bomb when appropriate. And I probably will at some point during this podcast. But I had like a little Martha Stewart like stamp kit that you could change the letters. And it was so hard to like change the little letters to where you wanted them to go. So I'd like buy the blank card. It's embarrassing because, again, this is very wrong. No, don't do it this way if you're starting out. But I'd like buy the blank cards from Michaels, like stamp the cards, and then have to change it every time to make a new card. It took so long.
This is the first time I'm hearing this story. I did not know
It's so embarrassing because it's just, I had no idea. I had no clue what I was doing.
Okay, if it makes you feel any better, I'll share a story that's super embarrassing. I called Chelsea from Sugar Paper. This was like back in like 2007, and I was just starting Kelp Designs, my stationery brand, and I asked her, you know, would you be willing to sit down for coffee with me? And she was so kind and gracious. It was like cold call, email off the internet kind of deal. Like, we met at Coffee Bean, and I showed her my cards, and I was buying my envelopes at Paper Source. Like, I didn't realize there was a Waste Not Paper like wholesale arm, and I could get them at a fraction of the price. And she enlightened me to this whole world of like sourcing products from elsewhere. And I was so grateful at the time, but also just like so embarrassed that I didn't already know these kind of, we don't know what we don't know at the beginning, you know?
Totally. And I constantly tell myself this, like after I took Paper Camp a couple, I think it was like 2 years ago, I was like, I'm so fucking dumb. Why didn't I do this sooner? Because I was like, I do everything wrong. So even more embarrassing. So after stamping, I was like, you know what? I don't really like stamping, obviously, because also it's just black and white. Like it was just words on a card. And I was charging I think I was charging $2 a card. Like, it was just insane. It was awful. Wow. And so I had people asking to wholesale, and I was like, I literally can't do that. I don't understand. And so after that, I switched to, I had like a Silhouette, like a vinyl cutter or like, you know, a craft, whatever. Because again, my whole experience has never, ever, ever been from a business perspective. It's never been about margins. It's never been about how can I sell these things? How can I recreate these things? It has always been about what can I make and how can I make it fun? Right. And so for a long time, I was doing cards with like vinyl. So I'd like cut out the cutter would cut the vinyl, and then I'd apply the vinyl to every single card, which is also just the worst. And so I was trying to wholesale, and I was literally like, I'd stay up until like 4 a.m. because I had a full-time job at that point. And I was like, I cannot, like something has to change. And so I sort of like dabbled in letterpress a little bit and like asked some people locally. But the people I asked were like, it's like this old man who like loves letterpress, but like doesn't really understand how to like put it in a business perspective.
Right.
And so I was like, well, letterpress is out. But I wanted, for a long time, I wanted a tactile sort of feeling. And it's been a process. Like, I didn't hand letter my cards until like 4 years ago, and that was a whole thing. And now that's all I do. I printed my own cards until like a year and a half ago. Like, it's just, I've always approached something as like, well, I can do this myself, and like not finding people that can do it for me, that printers that can do it for me or whatever else. And so now it's been like sort of a weird shift to be like, I can make this, I can like design this thing and someone else can make it. That's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask you this then. How do you balance creating for your own enjoyment and, you know, fulfillment versus what could possibly be a saleable product for your brand?
That's something that I'm still struggling with even till today, because it's hard for me, because it is like, that's why I started making candles in the first place, because I wanted that make something with my hands. I wanted that sort of satisfaction of being like, yeah, I made this. And then I got to the point where it was like, okay, I made the candles. And then the candles were selling wholesale. And then I was like, okay, so now I need to make 200 candles every 2 weeks. Like, oh God. And then people keep asking about the candles, and the candles are always sold out. And so for me, it's, I fall into the trap of like, well, I can do this. And then it just starts to feel like a production line.
Yeah.
So I'm starting to toy with the idea, and I've done a few things here and there of doing like really limited edition things that aren't available for wholesale. So I can still feel like I'm making certain things and making them available to people, but not have to feel like I have to make 400 of them.
Right, right. It's a balance for sure. Okay, yeah. So that's your rocky start. I mean, I don't say that unkindly. I empathize. And I also just feel like that's all of our stories, right? Starting out, we don't know what we don't know. But now you've been in business for over 8 years. And in that time, you have amassed an Instagram following with over 16,000 people. You have opened a retail shop. You have decided to leave that retail space. You've expanded your product line to over 300 SKUs. And then you've also discontinued half of that product line. You have had so many successes, and you've also been super intentional with each shift that you've made in your business. And I'd like to dive into kind of each of those if we can, if you're open to that.
Yeah,
okay, absolutely. So let's start first with the retail space. Why did you decide to move your business out of your home studio and into a retail studio space?
Well, so I was working out of my previous home. I was working out of the basement, and I had just like a really good show season, and I just quit my full-time job. And I was like, you know what? I have to go hard at this. And so the short answer for a lot of these, I mean, I'll go into more detail, of course, but like the short answer for a lot of these things is that I felt like I was following a path of what I had to do. Mm-hmm. So I felt like there were steps, and everybody did the steps, and I had to do the steps just like everybody else, even if I hated those steps.
Right.
And it got to the point where for a lot of things, I just realized it was unsustainable for me. So for the retail shop, it was something that was amazing and wonderful. That'd been my dream since the beginning, was like, make stuff, have a shop, people can come buy the stuff.
Right.
And then I sort of realized that it was less about the shop and more about sort of my business in general, that it was getting so large and growing so fast that I wasn't necessarily keeping up with the scale of it. So it was still just me. And I had some part-time help occasionally, but it was mostly just me working constantly, trying to just barely keep my head above water.
Right.
And I went on a retreat with Katie and some other wonderful, amazing ladies, and realized like I saw my business in two very distinct paths. I'm sort of combining the retail shop and the launch.
That's okay.
SKUs.
Keep going.
But I sort of saw myself as going down two very distinct paths. And like the first path felt easy to me, because it was like, you know what? I know I've seen all these other amazing businesses grow, and now that I have help and coaching, like I know what I should be doing if I want to get a huge business. So it was already a six-figure business, but I was killing myself literally trying to keep up with it. So right. I said, you know, I can figure out my inventory systems and my, you know, the money aspect, the accounting. I can figure out all this stuff. I can hire people. I can add more products. I can add more overhead, and I can be a boss. I can be a CEO. I can be managing people and looking at spreadsheets and figuring out orders. And I hated that idea. It sounded horrible to me. And some people like love that. Like, I feel like there's two types of creative business owners. There's the creative business owners who love, love, love to create things above all else, and they just sort of slog through the business stuff. And then there's the creative business owners who love doing the creative stuff, but sort of realize their passion for business. And I am very much in the camp of I slog through the business stuff. It is not my favorite, is not a thing that I like to do. I can manage, but it takes me way longer than the people who are like passionate about the business stuff.
As somebody that's outside looking in, and I've seen the intimate details of your business, I can tell you you're doing a great job. It may feel like you're slogging through, but you're not just slogging. You are successfully navigating all of it. So don't sell yourself short there.
Yeah, but I think it's important to acknowledge, because I've done so many courses and so many classes where it's like, and so many people have just told me like, you just got to learn to love the business stuff. You just got to learn to love the business stuff, and then you'll start to make more money. And it's like, that for me is like, seems like the hardest puzzle in the world. Because for those people, it's totally normal. I've run into so many people who are like, yeah, I just really started to like, I set goals for myself, and I wanted this amount of growth, and I reached out to this many people, and I did this and outreach and blah, 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 and spreadsheets. And my brain does not work that way. And right. so it's
But just, I think knowing your brain doesn't work that way yeah. is a huge epiphany, because then you can change gears. And Absolutely. As you've done, you know, yeah. you were able to make some big shifts, and we'll talk about that coming up here. But like, those shifts have afforded you a lot of other opportunities, which we'll also talk about. So let's back up a bit.
Yeah,
did you have – no, it's okay. Did having a space outside your home help you focus, or did you feel like it was more of a distraction because you had people coming in?
Yeah, it was a little of both, because okay. I really liked having set hours, but it was hard for me, again, as an introvert, to be like – in my little, you know, little cocoon of like coming up with ideas or working on a spreadsheet or filling orders or something. And then someone would walk in the door and I'd have to immediately switch and be like, okay, you're an extrovert. You're going to be charming and funny now and it's fine. And I was just tired all the time from that.
Right.
So that was a big part of that. But yeah, I guess to back up. So it was like the two paths. So I saw myself like being a boss, being a business owner. And then the other path that I saw was like super unknown. It's like, it'd be like the creepy path that you think is haunted, but you don't, because you don't know what's at the end of it. And that right. was, it was one where I realized, you know what, I can actually scale back. I can have more time to create new things, to figure out what I like, what I don't like, and not feel pressure to follow these steps or this path that everybody else seems to be following. Mm-hmm. And even though it was terrifying, I was like, that's the path that I want, because I don't like having a retail store. I don't like managing the inventory. I don't like changing the displays, even though, you yeah. know, I thought I would. I love talking to customers, but I hate like being on the spot, like not being able to prepare mentally for right. having to talk to customers. The overhead was huge. I mean, I live in Denver, Colorado, and commercial real estate here is just insanity. So it was like, well, I'm paying $1,000 a month just in overhead, which yeah. was part of the impetus of like, oh, I need to create more products and sell to more wholesale people so I can make enough money to just stay afloat.
Yeah. You felt like you were feeding the beast. So
yeah,
exactly. I like the analogy too of like, one path was I'm trying to build an empire, so to speak, and I can build that infrastructure. I know what I need to do, or I can get the help to do that. Or the unknown path of, but I don't know what's down that unknown path, but I do know it's not this empire path. So
yeah,
that was a really hard, I know that was a really hard decision for you to make.
Yeah, there was a lot of tears and a lot of second guessing myself.
And there's a lot of fears around it. What kind of fears did you have? And then how did you kind of work through that?
Well, fear for me, I feel like, is a constant, like, daily companion. And I'm trying to be like, okay, fear, you exist, but I don't have to live my life by you. Like, you don't have to dictate everything I do.
Yeah.
And so part of it has just sort of been that and just being okay, because I plan everything. Like, I'm a planner, at least like a list maker. Like, I don't like executing things, but I like planning them. So to be like... You know, like I have a 20-point detailed list, and so of whatever, like going on vacation drives my boyfriend crazy. But so I've tried to embrace this whole not knowing what's next. And that's been the hardest, because I feel yeah. like ever since I was a kid, it's like you always know what's next. When you're in middle school, you go into high school. When you're in high school, you get good grades, you go to college. When you're in college, you get a good job. And then even as a business owner, it was like, you work really hard, you do craft shows, you do bigger things, you make bigger investments, you take bigger risks, you get the yeah. retail store, you get employees, you get this notoriety. And so not having that map laid out has been the hardest part, is just sort of being like, I guess I got to make my own map now.
But did it feel invigorating and exciting to make that decision, or was it just scary? You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
some people would look at it as an opportunity, right?
Yeah.
To do whatever, a clean slate to start with. And other people, it could be crippling, scary, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it was both. It was like both emotions every day. And still, mm-hmm. I mean, still to this point, I still don't have it figured out. I'm still in my sort of like exploring phase and like figuring out again like what I like, what I don't like. But it has been really exciting to sort of, because it's not like I gave the business up. I'm still
working
on it, but it's been really exciting to do it, like you said, with intention, to be smart about it. So it's like I actually make more money now per order than when I did with all these other different products. And but it feels easier because I have more control over it. It feels more exciting because it's like, well, now I have time to make new cards. Whereas before, it was literally the last thing on my daily, weekly, monthly, whatever list was creativity. It was like, it was lost in there. So it's been a mix of both. I will say it's been like, it's probably like 60% terrifying, 40% so exciting that I could just puke.
Well, we'll get you the other. We'll flip those numbers. Okay, shifting to talk about products a little bit, because this does feed into what you were just talking about in the fear and the transitions. How many SKUs did you have this time last year, and what product categories were you selling in?
Yeah.
Like, what types of products?
Yeah. I think I blacked out on the exact number. I was like, I don't ever need to remember that number ever again. I'm not going to. But I want to say it was like close to 300. So it was close to like 300 SKUs. I had pins. I had magnets. I had keychains. I had mugs. I had onesies. I had tote bags. I had a ridiculous different amount of things.
Did you say candles too? You had candles.
I had candles also.
But like a wide range. It wasn't just paper goods. It was like textiles. It was hard goods.
Yeah, it was sort of like gifty lifestyle stationery like last.
Right.
And so now it's switched to like stationery first.
Okay, so how many SKUs do you roughly have now?
I want to say like 160 because I just did a big new release.
Right. And what was your process for figuring out what you were going to let go of and what you were going to keep?
A lot of it was actual constraints, so like physical space. So my retail space, which was also my studio space, the amount of, I probably had like 1,500 square feet out of the 3,000 square feet that offices/retail spaces mixed together.
Oh, right.
And now it's a 10x10 room that's also the furnace room. So it was literally a matter of like, what will fit and what am I excited about still doing? And mugs did not fit into that. And also I hate shipping mugs and I hate shipping candles. So it sort of worked out. So it was a little bit of like, practically, what can I continue making/storing/have room for? And then also partially like, what am I so sick of that I can't even deal with anymore?
Yeah. And two, we also talked about, we did look at numbers too to see profit margins of different things, but also to your point, the logistics of, you know, housing 1,000 mugs versus 1,000 cards, the space you need for that and the shipping of that. And like, it's very different. So
yeah,
I like how you weighed in on. Yes, it does. Very bluntly, yes. No, but I think it's important to kind of just recap that the practical side of the storage, the practical side of the shipping, the financial side of it, and also your excitement level. You mentioned that too. You know, what are you pumped about making? What excites you to create? And also the time component.
Yeah. And I mean, and it's for me, I always fell into the trap of like, oh, here's this new product I can make. And then I would not think it through because I get so excited about it. And that's how it happened. That's how those 300 SKUs happened. So it was like, oh, I can get my screen printer to make onesies. And then it was like, okay, but what do I do for packaging? And then like for the mugs and candles, especially, it was like, oh, I can make all this stuff. And then it's like, oh, but you have to buy new shipping boxes and new packaging, and you have to figure out like logistically how to get it to people in good shape. And then what if someone buys 3 mugs? What if someone buys 109 mugs? Like, so there's so many logistics that I was not thinking about because, again, I like the plan. I like the excitement of something new. And then a lot of times, at least in the past, will like forget everything that comes after that.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, I've been super proud of you over the last year because these shifts, although they've been super hard to navigate, we can hear it in your voice, but it's allowed you to do fewer things well within your business. It's allowed you to regain focus, and it's also given you more autonomy in your business. You're not on that rat race of, I got to pay these bills. I've got inflated bills because I've got the space and all these other things. So I need to create more product and I need to do more releases. So, you know, you were at a crossroads where you really had to decide if you wanted to build that empire or did you want to keep things small? And I'm really proud of you. I think it's been tough and I know you're still going through it now. So I appreciate you talking about it as you're navigating it. But I think it's really important, and I'm glad you brought up the fact that, like, business is not one size fits all. It is not a step ladder that we're all climbing and with the same steps. It's truly like a roller coaster with zigzags, you know, where we take two steps to the right and then go up and back or whatever. So how are you feeling now that you have officially, you know, you've moved out of the space, you've cut the SKUs, you're still in transition, but like, are you excited about what's to come?
Yeah, I'm super excited, actually. It was one of those things where, for me, if I don't second guess my decision and if I don't feel regret over it, like, that's how I know. And even now, the hard thing about it is that I loved the people that I owned the retail store with. Like, right. I loved being able to talk to my customers in real life. And so it's like a wistful sort of nostalgia versus like regret. There's no regret there. I'm really excited. And I think that's how I sort of know that I made the right decision, but it is hard because it is uncharted waters. But at the same time, it's like, well, but I control it. Like, I created this thing and therefore I make the rules and I can change it. And I think that so many people get stuck. And like, for me, it was the same thing. I just had blinders on because I was working so hard to get to a certain point. And then I got to that point. I had the retail store. I had the six-figure business. I had all of this. And then I looked around and was like, this sucks. I hate this. And so, but it's so easy. I mean, I easily could have gone another 5, 10, however many years with those blinders on, with my head down, just building this thing because I thought that was the way that you were supposed to do it, even though it really didn't work for me.
Right. So you and I have talked about this in our group, and I talked about this on the podcast too, of like, it is so important to pick your head up every now and then and truly look around your business and be like, which path am I, you know, because again, our head is down, we're doing the hard work. Let me pull my head back up. Let me make sure that I am running towards the right goals, or that my vision is still in alignment with where I'm heading. And that's what you're doing. You know, you're just making changes to fit where you want to be going. Can we talk about Instagram for a minute?
Sure. I love Instagram. I'm like, I think I'm in the minority for like business owners where I still like really, truly enjoy Instagram.
I love it too because of the connections and the engagement. You also have to remember, I like came up in the business world before Instagram was around and Twitter was where we were all chatting. And so to be able to like have the chatting component of Twitter, but with the visual side of it, I just think it's really fun.
Yeah.
But how long did it take you to get, you know, to 16,000 followers?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm qualified to talk about like getting followers because I honestly don't know how that happened. It was not a conscious effort on my part to be like, I'm going to hit a certain amount of followers. And to be truly honest to people who feel like bad about their followers, like mine this year especially has sort of like stayed pretty stagnant because I think
mine too.
Instagram's like changed a lot of stuff. So if you're like really trying hard to grow your Instagram, like you have to know there's an element of control you just sort of have to give up and just sort of let it happen. But it's really interesting because I think I probably had like less than 400 followers in 2015. Or like 2016, even probably. I think I celebrated 1,000 followers. It would have been like 2015 was when I like got to 1,000 followers, and I was so over the moon excited. And I think the key that people forget about Instagram is that, and I hate the word authenticity. I hate it so much because I feel like it gets used over and over and over for ridiculous things.
Yeah.
But it really is about being your true self. And that is literally the only thing that I have done that makes my business, I guess, I don't know if appealing or like stand out from some other businesses on Instagram.
Well, I was going to ask, and I didn't want it to come out weird, and now it's extra weird, but like, why do you think people are drawn to you on social media? And I do think it is because you're authentic, and I know you don't like the word, but like, you are your true self, and I think too because you use stories in such a raw way that other people don't do on your business page too.
Oh, yeah. I think the thing that I do differently is that like selling for me on Instagram is sort of like a backseat. Like it's definitely in the car, but I'm not like looking at it every 2 minutes being like, how can I sell more? How can I convert these people into, you know, dollar signs? For me, it really is more of a connection thing. And for a while, I hated Instagram. I hated doing it because I fell into the same trap of like just being like, well, I guess I should be posting this and I should be doing this. And then I don't know what happened in my head, but I switched it all around and I was like, this can be fun. This can be a thing you can do for enjoyment and to make other people laugh versus just a thing that you have to do because you have a business and you're expected to do right. XYZ. So for me, I don't necessarily like see it as a business thing. It is, but almost all of my stories, I would say like 90% of my stories are just sort of me talking to the camera or like me talking about ridiculous things that happen during the day. And people remember that. It's insane.
They do. Yeah. So how are you leveraging stories versus Instagram posts differently?
So yeah. So for me, I think of posts a little bit more kind of like a portfolio a little bit. So it's like when someone comes across your brand page, like they can sort of get the gist of who you are and what you stand for. That's sort of the way that I see posts. And also I see a lot of people asking questions, and that's what all social media people tell you to do is like, ask, what are you doing this weekend? But you're not going to get any answers because it's people know you're just supposed to ask a question. So you're asking a question. But so I'll ask like, you know, what was your first AIM screen name? Mine was Draco's Princess 25 because I love Harry Potter and it was absurd. And so I tied that in with like a new card that I was releasing. So a lot of the times it's not necessarily me being like, oh, you can buy this thing. It's like, here's why I made this thing. Here's why you'll probably think it's funny. Here's why I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
Or I'm also using posts a lot. I've been trying to be really honest about the transition from owning a store and everything else and, you know, my fears and my doubts and my excitement and everything else. So my followers know that, like they know me as a person. And yeah. I think that's hard for a lot of people. I don't know why it comes naturally to me, but I don't get really like vulnerability hangovers. Like I don't mind showing behind the scenes. And that's really what resonates with people is that they know me, like maybe even a little too much. Like a couple years ago, I got dumped and I posted about how I got dumped and like 10 people came up to me in a craft show like, I'm sorry, I hope you're okay. That guy sucks. He was the worst. But I don't see a lot of boundaries there. Yeah, and I think for me, that's because I have fought to keep it like a one woman business for the most part. So like the only, and I mean, that's the whole goal with my cards too, is like, I don't just say happy birthday. It's like whatever way only I can say, I mean, I'm sure other people could too, but like it's my whole business is built about around my weirdo brain. And it turns out that people like that weirdo brain. And so
because you say things in the way that they can relate to it. I want to go back real quick. You know, I realized we kicked off this Instagram section talking about followers as if it was like the end all be all to get a ton of followers. And you've heard me talk about this many, many times. But like I am a true believer that it's not about the numbers. It's about the engagement and the number of people that are like responding to what you're putting out. And so, but I do think for somebody that has had, you know, it's really blossomed for you over the last few years. And it was kind of a big jump in a short amount of time when other people were struggling to grow their numbers or had stagnation in their numbers. And so I just wanted to give a nod to you that like, that was really cool.
Thank you. Yeah. And it's, I mean, again, it's like one time I posted, I was really, really drunk after an event that I went to. And I posted me like drunkenly talking about a rom-com eating cold Taco Bell. And that was like 6 months ago and people still talk to me about that. And and I almost deleted it the next morning when I saw it. But then I was like, you know what? This is real life. I don't really care.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's when people turn to Instagram, like, yes, they want an outlet. They want to see sort of what other people's lives are, but they don't want to see the perfection. They want to see the reality of what's going on. And my natural personality is to do that in like a fun, funny way. And so I think that's just sort of like the magic mix there is that, you know, it's natural for me because that's how I would tell my friends about a certain thing that happened. Like I went into a nail salon the other day and they were playing this like really gory Quentin Tarantino movie. And there's like all these old ladies next to me, like the middle of the day. And that was the thing that I was like, I should put this on Instagram because it's just so ridiculous.
It's so absurd, but it's true.
It's so ridiculous.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, hey, if you could go back in time to when you were starting your business, knowing everything you know now, what advice would you give yourself?
I think if I could go back in time, I would there's a few things, but I would start with like figuring out resources that worked for me. I feel like it was a few years in that I figured out actual classes. So like Paper Camp was a huge one for me that I just didn't know about for a long time because I didn't really seek it out because I always thought that business information would like come from a white dude who would tell me something that I didn't want to hear, kind of, yeah, you know, like right. I always thought it was sort of like a, like you were saying before, I thought it was a one size fits all. And mm-hmm. so I wish I'd found like a community earlier within what I was doing. And then secondly, I think for myself, I would tell either both my younger self and people starting out is like, the only reason I still have a business is because I'm super stubborn. And I think persistence is more important than talent or money or a lot of things, because every business owner is going to be, you know, you're going to get tripped up by those things that you think are the end of the world at the time. Yep. And it breaks some people as like business owners, and other people are like, you know what, I'm just going to keep going because I'm just so dang passionate about this thing that I'm doing. So I think that those are the two things that I would talk about would be patience, persistence, and also just like seeking out appropriate knowledge, not just knowledge for knowledge's sake.
No, I love that. Well, what's next for Craft Boner? What are you working on? What do you want to share with everybody listening?
I have no idea. I mean, I released a bunch of new cards. I have some other products like notepads and pens and stuff I'm sort of working on in my head. But part of the reason that I scaled back was so that I could take on other creative projects. So
right.
I've been sort of thinking slash working on doing a book. I've been thinking slash working on doing like crafting videos. So I guess it's a privilege at this point to sort of not know what I'm doing, but it is still a little terrifying, and there's nothing solidified. So I have no idea, but I am very excited for whatever
it's going to be amazing. Whatever it ends up being, it's going to be amazing. Well, where can people find you online to follow this journey that you're in the middle of, or, you know, check out the products you have?
Sure. So craftboner.com has all the products. And then, like I said, I really feel like I built a sort of little weirdo community on Instagram. So it's just Craft Boner on Instagram, because that was not a handle that was already taken.
It wasn't?
No. Shocking.
Lucky you. All right, Kiwi, it was so fun to sit down with you today. Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Of course. It's my pleasure. Hey friends, registration for our next Paper Camp conference is now open. Whether you are brand new to business or you've dipped your toe into the wholesale world and want to see better results, this program is for you. We will walk you through every single detail of how to sell wholesale and exhibit at wholesale trade shows. This means that you'll build a business with a solid wholesale foundation. You'll come across polished and professional, and you'll make a great first impression with every buyer you meet. It's truly that simple. Don't wait. Join us September 19th and 20th in Los Angeles for Paper Camp. Head to prooftoproduct.com/papercamp to register. Thanks so much for spending time with us today. Head on over to prooftoproduct.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover free resources to help you build your product-based business. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks again.